The process of birth within the Tree of Life. I am presenting the following as an explanation to the modern Christians who have been victimized by the religious leaders throughout the past and possess virtually no understanding of the nature of the original teachings of Jesus that have been suppressed by the church. And this is especially true with respect to the question of why the Bible rejects the modern issue of homosexual marriage, why Jesus portrayed adultery as sin, and perhaps just as important is the issue as to whether Catholic priests should have the right to marry. In the below, I set numerous links where important subjects and human realities are explored in great depth. These links are necessary because they permit me to write in summary, which means that to truly understand the transformative power of the divine marriage is a catalyst to become nourished by the life-giving fruit of the tree of knowledge. It is imperative to understand the foundational environment in which man's access to the tree of life is obtained. With respect to attaining oneness with first our true self, and ultimately the indwelling Logos. If what you are asking was easy and the process could be easily conveyed, then the biblical authors would have written it down literally, so that seekers would know the process. But this is not at all the case as demonstrated at. And this to the degree that Paul stated to the same people who he had himself taught the elementary principles of the gospel, which he called the testimony of Christ, that if he had spoken to them with any degree of spiritual maturity and higher spiritual wisdom, that they would reject what he would state as utter foolishness. And this inability for man in his organic condition of mind to perceive and comprehend his own higher soul and spiritual reality is true across the spectrum of humanity and is as valid today as when those words were written 2,000 years ago. Why? Because what is required is self-knowledge as stated in the Gospel of Thomas. But if you will not know yourselves, you dwell in poverty, and it is you who are that poverty. Self-knowledge includes, but is not limited to, an understanding of what we portray as the cosmology of mind and being, see, an understanding of the laws and forces of mind upon which man's consciousness is manifest, including a thorough understanding of one's own relationship to their higher soul self, an understanding of the personality that you are in relation to the personalities, that your soul self has lived in what is often portrayed as the previous and future lives of your higher soul self, an understanding of your higher soul self's relationship to Creator God, your soul's relationship to all other souls that dwell within the mind of God, and the dynamics of the relationship and reality of the male/female paradoxical opposites of both creation and the divine pattern, as well as the dynamics of the holographic pattern as expressed within your own mind and being. The process is not a merging with one's higher self. We don't merge with our higher soul self, that is a being of light, see, which we are an embryonic projection of and exists in an inner reality of mind and being, but as Jesus stated to Nicodemus, "You must bring about the next stage of birth, that is." Jesus answered him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God." John 3:3. But what exactly was Jesus making reference to? Is the birth process that of repeating words in what is commonly portrayed as the sinner's prayer? In the same way that physical birth requires the merging and development of male and female essence in the womb, the next stage of birth requires the merging of the male and female, paradoxical, opposite spheres of mind within you, as stated in the Gospel of Thomas, saying 22. They said to him, "Shall we then, as children, enter the kingdom?" Jesus said to them, "When you make the two one, and when you make the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male, nor the female female, then will you enter the kingdom." In the same way that an embryo, which is the merging of male and female essence, must evolve through the stages of embryo, fetus, infant, and eventually to maturity, the third force balance of the male/female duality within your own mind must evolve to maturity. One of the problems is that man is a complex being, with the tree of life being a representation and pattern of your own mind, which means that the pattern of your own mind is the manifestation of four trinities, comprised of four male/female paradoxical opposites, which comprise the tree of duality, aka tree of knowledge of good and evil, with the essence of the tree of life being the four third force balanced spheres, where the duality of the opposites must be brought together and evolved to maturity. The process of birth requires wholeness, a term not understood that is used throughout the Gospels. In the same way that the Trinity is portrayed as mother/father God, and the third force balance/offspring portrayed as the Logos or Son of God. All of creation is a manifestation of the divine pattern that is holographically imprinted into every aspect of creation. Wholeness. From the perspective of man, that brings about the next stage of birth, thereby permitting the person we are in this world to be at one with our higher soul self. C. is achieved when the third force balance of the four trinities within our own mind and being have achieved a condition of fullness, and this fullness enables the next stage of birth to be brought about. A condition of fullness and wholeness which prompted the disciples to make reference to themselves as children. In the Gospel of Thomas, Gough T., saying 22, this reality is portrayed in the question. They said to him, "Shall we then, as children, enter the kingdom?" With respect to these four trinities and their respective third force balance spheres that comprise the essence of the tree of life, they can be portrayed as the perfect balance of what is often spoken of as earth, water, fire, and air, which, when in the condition of evolved balance and wholeness, is portrayed as the good ground in the parable of the sower and the seed. And the references to receiving the kingdom as a child in the four Gospels is a corruption of this reality, where you must evolve the third force balance within the four trinities of your own mind and achieve the next stage of birth, which birth we often portray as soul birth, in that this next stage of birth enables you to become at one with your higher soul self, which is your true self that you are an expression of. After all, as stated, that a house divided cannot stand. After achieving the next stage of birth, which we portray as soul birth, there are still two additional stages of birth which can be portrayed as spiritual birth, and the final stage of birth, which is allegorically portrayed in the crucifixion, where one is at one with God in the totality of their being, thus reuniting the divided realities of Adam and Eve on all levels within you, permitting a return to what is portrayed as the Garden of Eden. See, quoting from the pattern of mind and being. After eating the forbidden fruit of the tree of duality, aka tree of knowledge of good and evil, the statement was made in the allegorical account of Genesis, the man has now become like one of us, knowing good and evil. He must not be allowed to reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat, and live forever. Gen 3:22-23. Thus, the objective of life is to become nourished by the fruit of the tree of life, that is, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will grant to eat of the tree of life which is in the paradise of God. Rev 2:7. And respecting the tree of life, it is written, then he showed me a river of the water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street, on either side of the river, was the tree of life, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Rev 22:1-2. With the final statement pertaining to the eating of the fruit of the tree of life in order to gain entrance to what is often portrayed as spiritual Jerusalem in the words, blessed are those who wash their robes, so that they may have the right to the tree of life, and that they may enter the city by the gates. Rev 22:14. Only by eating the fruit of the tree of life, being nourished by the impressions thereof, can the next stage of soul birth be brought about. And only then can man achieve the necessary wholeness to become at one with his higher soul self and ultimately the indwelling Logos. And only by travailing in the way and permitting these subsequent stages of birth to be brought about within your own mind and being, can the journey of the soul be fulfilled and the seeker/disciple enter the kingdom that Jesus taught is within us. See Luke 17:20-21. One of the only reasons that I can even present the process of achieving the next stage of soul birth that the biblical authors could not in the past is because of modern web technology that permits me to set hyperlinks into a large array of subjects that would be too complex to place in a standard document or book that has been written from a linear perspective. And the fact that the people I am writing for are all fairly educated and can read with a high degree of reason, whereas in the past, only the very elite were educated and could read. This enables me to write and convey in summary and set links to those areas within the supporting documents that are relevant to what I am attempting to convey. In the law of octaves, which was the mainstay of the wisdom of both Pythagoras and Gurdjieff, reference is made to the necessary foods that act as a catalyst at the point where the progression sequence twists. Gurdjieff correctly portrayed the final food in the last stage of the octave as impressions, making note that few people would even be able to fathom what the nature of this food is. In my intro to the law of octaves, see, there is a pictorial of an enneagram, which is seen on the right, which presents the formation of food within the body and mind of man. And these crucial impressions are presented throughout what follows the subheading The Esoteric Feminine Mystica. Part of my presentation in London in the Conference on Consciousness and Human Evolution on the subject To Know Thyself, I presented important information on the impressions generated by men and women as presented in the subheading The Divine Pattern of Mind, see. When what is portrayed as the fruit of the tree of duality is in fact the thoughts and impressions of the divided spheres of the male/female mind. While the whole of the previous subheading is extremely important to understand, let me focus on one segment within the context of what is presented, quoting. In the diagram on the left, we see the aura, or etheric field, that encompasses both the man and woman individually, as well as forming the morphic field that has the power to create a unique and individualized atmosphere, which immerses the husband and wife in their own personalized threefold environment, physical, mental, and spiritual, that has the capacity to manifest and join the two halves in oneness. When the scriptures speak of the man and woman becoming one flesh, it is the morphic field that is created in a spiritual union/marriage. See the foundation of a coverture marriage that has immersed the man and woman into a common atmosphere, insulating them from the outer world and belonging solely to them. In the diagram on the right, we see a pictorial representation of the merger of the bioenergy that, when joined, is no longer lost into nature, but rather is channeled within the dynamics of the union. In the subheading entitled The Merger of Opposites into One, I demonstrate where the impressions generated by an evolving man and woman are in fact the food portrayed by Gurdjieff, who built upon the foundation of Pythagoras and the esoteric gospel teachings, to demonstrate that it is the merger of the opposite polarity male/female impressions that brings about the expansion of mind and being within the morphic field of the seeker/disciple. See morphic field. The holographic divine pattern of the Trinity. Consciousness requires energy. Energy requires the duality and polarities of positive/male and negative/female divided polarities that come together in the third force balance of mind. Without the two polarities, positive/male and negative/female, consciousness cannot exist. The term holographic pattern means that the pattern is replicated into all the parts of that make up the whole. This is expressed in the Genesis account of creation in the words, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." That man was created in the image of God with the potential to evolve into the likeness of God means that all that is within God is also within each of us, and this holographic reality has further been expressed in the words, "As above, so below," and what is true of the macrocosm is also true of the microcosm. In the ancient world, the revealer of all truth was portrayed as the Logos, that is, the mind of God, and that man possessed the innate ability to tap into and learn directly from the spark of the Logos that dwelled within them was the true objective of religion. The Encyclopedia Britannica writes of the word Logos, in Greek philosophy and theology, the divine reason implicit in the cosmos, ordering it and giving it form and meaning. Though the concept defined by the term Logos is found in Greek, Indian, Egyptian, and Persian philosophical and theological systems, the idea of the Logos in Greek thought harks back at least to the 16th century BC philosopher Heraclitus, who discerned in the cosmic process a Logos analogous to the reasoning power in man. Later, the Stoics, philosophers who followed the teachings of the thinker Zeno of Citium, 4th–3rd century BC, defined the Logos as an active, rational, and spiritual principle that permeated all reality. Philo of Alexandria, a 1st century AD Jewish philosopher, taught that the Logos was the intermediary between God and the cosmos, being both the agent of creation and the agent through which the human mind can apprehend and comprehend God. According to Philo and the Middle Platonists, philosophers who interpreted in religious terms the teachings of the 4th century BC Greek master philosopher Plato, the Logos was both immanent in the world and at the same time the transcendent divine mind. The identification of Jesus with the Logos, which is implied in various places in the New Testament but stated specifically in the Fourth Gospel, was further developed in the early church but more on the basis of Greek philosophical ideas. The early Christian fathers stated that Christ is the pre-existent Logos, reveals the Father to mankind, and is the subject of the Old Testament manifestations of God, is the divine reason in which the whole human race shares. So that the 6th century BC philosopher and others who lived with reason were Christians before Christ, and is the divine will and word by which the worlds were framed. If the Logos is the mind of God and mind equates to the consciousness of God, and the mind or consciousness can only exist as the product of positive/male and negative/female polarities, then the Logos/mind can be understood as the son or offspring of Father and Mother God. While man and woman enter this realm, which is a mental womb, as a cosmic ovum or sperm, it is the joining together in a divine marriage and union that evolves the male/female opposites into a cosmic embryo. A divine marriage where the man and woman are one flesh is built upon a coverture union. See the foundation of a coverture marriage. In the dynamics of the male/female union, the two have the capacity to become one body. See study on DNA exchange. It is then the physical, mental, and spiritual interaction of the male/female opposites being individually nourished by the impressions generated that evolves both the husband and wife beyond organic limitations, which initiate the necessary transformation that leads to achieving the next stage of soul birth. Women polarize positive at breasts, in the same way that men and women are polarized opposite polarities. Their inherent gender weaknesses, needs, and desires are also opposite. Men are polarized positive at the genitals, which empowers the lower animal nature. See organic man controlled by his lower animal nature, and is often totally controlled and consumed by his need to fulfill the appetites of his lower nature. What this means is that while men are easily controlled by the often unmanageable flow of vital, sexual, life force that flows from their genital regions, women, on the other hand, are polarized opposite in the genitals, and thus are able to exert a greater amount of control with respect to their sexuality. On the other hand, women's breasts, which, unlike the animal kingdom, are perpetually enlarged because her body serves a higher purpose than just providing nourishment for infants, is polarized positive in this area of mind. This positive polarization is often seen as being over-emotional, sensitive, empathetic, and much more feeling than her male counterpart, who perceives life through the vision of linear mathematical logic. Thus, the male is polarized negative at that level of mind that corresponds to the breast. In order to receive this higher and more refined vital life force back from his wife, thereby creating a circle between them that initiates mental/spiritual development and the birth of the child of truth within the two that are one. Look around you at the world and you will observe the male's absolute fixation on women's breasts. Why? Not because of their desire to nurse, as some of our psychologists have reasoned, but rather because they possess an absolute need for the vital life force energy from that region of mind where women are polarized positive. The problem is that because they fail to comprehend the divine pattern and do not realize that they can only receive this vital life force from a wife in a genuine marriage, and most women whose thinking and lifestyle have been molded by our culture and modern society are sexually polluted and cannot provide the man the mental/spiritual nourishment that they, men, crave, see sexual immorality. They continually look to other women in search of what they can only receive from just one who is their genuine wife. The problem is twofold, that is, neither the men nor the women are able to fulfill the biological, mental, and spiritual needs of their respective spouse/partner. So they look to others instead of developing the depth of the relationship between themselves. Men are constantly looking at other women, and are therefore expelling their vital life force, that is. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Matt 5:28 NIV. Their female partners dress provocatively so as to be seen as sexual objects, flirt with other men so they can feel the energy within them stir, and move their positively charged, sexual, centers and work outside the home in their endeavor to be with others, acquire materialistic things, and maintain a state of independence from their spouses. While this may be a marriage in the eyes of this world or the church, It is not genuine in the spiritual meaning of the marriage relationship where the two become one flesh. Carnal man is literally staving for the higher reality and vital life force that he craves. Woman feels incomplete as if she is deprived of sex and fulfillment because she cannot raise up and release the energy within herself. The problem is not only her own inability to raise up this energy passed on to her by males, but there are no males who are able to receive it from her. She therefore feels unsatisfied, discontent, and ungratified in her life. Some women feel that they will achieve the satisfaction they desire by going out to work, being independent, and making their way in the business world. But this is not the solution. The problem is that she is incomplete, and even when she attempts to enter into a relationship with a man, in time her incompleteness will return. She craves to express herself, to strive for higher meaning, to feel complete, but because of her inability to enter into a genuine marriage where she can raise herself up to new spiritual heights, she is destined to remain discontent and incomplete. The man, on the other hand, unknowingly craves what only a genuine wife can provide to him. Being polarized negative at that part of the mind associated with the chest, he feels a great void in his life that he falsely interprets as a lack of sex. He unconsciously is drawn to women's breast, because that is the source of bioenergy he desires and craves. He therefore seeks out many women in search of what he can receive from only one. He often is addicted to pornography and nudity, intoxicated with the naked female form, and especially the breasts, ever searching for what he cannot have and possess, bound to the elemental things of this world through the unquenchable appetite of his senses. Added the application of the law of octaves and the real Trinity. Why does the Gospels portray man as having been born blind, incapable of comprehending not only the spiritual meaning of the Gospels, but also his own higher soul realty? Why can't mankind know God? Why can't mankind see God? Why is the mind of man limited in his cognitive ability? Does mankind possess the ability to comprehend the mysteries of life and the universe? The answer to this question is affirmative, that is, man has the innate ability to know the truth of all truths, and the source of this truth exists at the essence of his own consciousness. And it is only a matter of understanding the natural laws and putting one's understanding into action. One of the primary teachings of the original Gospels was to reveal to the seeker/disciple how to prevail over the natural laws that limited his/her consciousness. But because the Gospel teachings were corrupted, the body of teachings are no longer as effective at opening the mind of the seeker/disciple to the higher truth of all truths. Therefore, many people seeking the answers to life have rejected the doctrines of the Church, and they instead pursued the path of science. But because the vast majority of scientists lack an understanding of the natural laws which control the consciousness of mankind, there exists great voids that act as great obstacles in the path of scientific inquiry and higher understanding. As an example, why can't science comprehend the mysteries of the universe? Robert Jastrow, an astrophysicist who headed the NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, pointed out that the Big Bang is not exactly an explanation of cause. He is quoted in the Aquarian Conspiracy, "If a scientist really examines the implications, he would be traumatized." As usual, when the mind is faced with trauma, it reacts by ignoring the implications. In science, this is called refusing to speculate, or by trivializing the origin of the world by calling it the Big Bang, as if the universe were merely a firecracker. Mr. Jastrow then continues and states, "Consider the enormousness of the problem. Science has proved that the universe exploded into being at a certain moment. It asks, what cause produced this effect? Who or what put the matter and energy into the universe? Was the universe created out of nothing, or was it gathered together out of pre-existing materials? And science cannot answer these questions. It is not a matter of another year, another decade of work, another measurement, or another theory. At this moment, it seems as though science will never be able to raise the curtain on the mystery of creation." In an article, "Things That Science Can't Explain" by Dr. Claude Swanson, he writes, "There are many things modern science cannot explain, and yet they occur anyway. This includes phenomena in the hard sciences, as well as in the paranormal. These effects are now being proven in the laboratory, even though they defy present scientific theory. These unfolding mysteries point the way to a new, deeper science. a science which no longer denies spirit and consciousness, but acknowledges and embraces them. In the past 3 decades, scientific evidence has accumulated showing that the present scientific paradigm is broken. Why is limitations placed upon the intellect and mind of mankind? The answer: because he does not understand what can be called the law of octaves and as warned by the enlightened deists of the past. In his organic condition of mind, man lacks an understanding of the natural laws as personified in the laws of nature and nature's God. And in not understanding what these same enlightened deists portrayed as the foundational theology of what is known as the clockmaker universe, even the purpose of life remains an unknown and unconquerable enigma to even the most intelligent among mankind. Yet, because of the effect of the law of octaves, the answer to all the mysteries of life perpetually lie before man's eyes. But until we learn why we are blind to our own higher soul reality, we will continue not to see the answers to the very life we are living. See the 3 causes of human blindness. To further clarify this statement, there is no such thing as secret knowledge, that is, God and the knowledge of all the mysteries of creation lie before our very eyes, but we remain blind to our own higher reality. Why? Because we are ignorant of the purpose and effect of the natural laws working upon our mind and consciousness. Can these laws be overcome? Yes, with the knowledge of the natural laws, their purpose in mankind's development, and the proper application of the laws in the person's life. While few people have ever heard of the law of octaves, what they fail to understand is the fact that the inability of the organic human ear to hear the twisting of the natural laws causes us to remain ignorant and alien to both our own true self and man's higher reality. To understand the natural laws, it is important to recognize that there exists an anomaly in the hearing of organic natural man, and while we can observe this anomaly in our sense of hearing, the anomaly is holographically true with not only all our senses, but also our cognitive abilities. And from a scientific perspective, this anomaly can be easily proven, but is for the most part ignored. An anomaly is defined as an abnormality, a blip on the screen of life that doesn't fit with the rest of the pattern. In the case of the musical scale, there exists an anomaly that is inconceivable to the vast majority of both musicians and mathematicians, which they cannot explain, and because they cannot explain it, for the most part, they ignore even the existence of the anomaly. The law of octaves inhibits all sequential progressions from moving in a straight line. Though the pattern of the natural laws is present throughout all of creation, the movement of the laws is perhaps easiest to see, hear, and observe in music and in pursuing and understanding. It is important to be cognizant of the reality that a musical note is a mathematical frequency that we are able to hear and detect with our ears. In the same way, like the octave, there are 7 colors within the spectrum of white light that is representative of frequencies that we see with our eyes. And in the consciousness of mankind, each of these frequencies are representative of a level of consciousness. See the source of soul light. And when rightly understood, the anomaly in our hearing is in accord with a pattern of the laws, and this pattern is replicated into all the laws of creation. And from a paradoxical perspective, while the effect of the anomaly can on one hand be seen as a limiting factor that inhibits our mental advancement, it is this same limiting factor that is necessary to open the door to our eventual enlightenment. Again, let me stress the fact that while the manifest laws at work can be demonstrated more easily in music, its far-reaching reality is prevalent throughout all aspects of life in this world and beyond. Recognizing the universal laws, it is written, having once established music as an exact science, Pythagoras applied his newly found law of harmonic intervals to all the phenomena of nature, even going so far as to demonstrate the harmonic relationship of the planets, constellations, and elements to each other. See the Pythagorean theory of music and color. And when rightly understood, the only difference between the intervals and twisting of the laws of octaves as portrayed in music, then, is that the same sequence of the laws that is easily observed in the notes of a musical scale is more difficult to observe throughout the other aspects of life, but quickly becomes apparent once one is cognizant of the pattern and sequence. Why is the knowledge of the movement of the laws important to not only seekers, but all of mankind? Because our ultimate success or failure in life is often the result of the natural laws bringing about the envisioned results. And while it is true that the natural laws impose a limiting factor upon man's acquisition of knowledge, The limitations are necessary in order to prepare us to receive and comprehend the higher knowledge we seek. Giordano Bruno and G.I. Gurdjieff both understood the intervals of the laws as manifest in the law of octaves, with Gurdjieff portraying his laws of three and the law of seven in the centerpiece of his teachings, as presented in the diagram of the enneagram as seen in the image on the left. P.D. Uspensky wrote in his book, In Search of the Miraculous, with respect to the enneagram being a symbol of consciousness. Speaking in general, it must be understood that the enneagram is a universal symbol. All knowledge can be included in the enneagram, and with the help of the enneagram it can be interpreted. And in this connection, only what a man is able to put into the enneagram does he actually know. That is, understand. What he cannot put into the enneagram, he does not understand. For the man who is able to make use of it, the enneagram makes books and libraries entirely unnecessary. Everything can be included and read in the enneagram. A man may be quite alone in the desert, and he can trace the enneagram in the sand, and in it read the eternal laws of the universe. And every time he can learn something new, something he did not know before. Take particular note of the words. For the man who is able to make use of it, the enneagram makes books and libraries entirely unnecessary. It is inconceivable to the vast majority of people how a person who is able to apply the tenets of the enneagram would no longer need books, teachers, the libraries of mankind. Why? Because few people comprehend the reality and practical application of applying the natural laws to tap into the inner source of knowledge that exceeds all the accumulated knowledge of mankind. See the empty and full mind paradigms of life. Giordano Bruno confirms the above when he stated with respect to this inner source of knowledge, that within every man there is a soul flame, kindled at the sun of thought, which lends us wings whereby we may approach the sun of knowledge, and that the vast majority of mankind ignore this inner source of knowledge, was confirmed by Bruno in the words, The divine light is always in man, presenting itself to the senses and to the comprehension, but man rejects it, while Plato did not openly make reference to the law of three or seven in the manner of mystics/mathematicians, such as Pythagoras, Bruno, Gurdjieff, and Uspensky. He did affirm the existence of an inner source of knowledge that those seeking genuine enlightenment must pursue, see the one teacher. In Plato's Principles of Anamnesis, he explained that the true teacher was like a midwife who did not instruct and use rote programming of the student's mind as is the case today, but instead must aid with the birth of knowledge that was already there in the student, see Anamnesis, the innate knowledge of the truth of all truths. Which means that he was affirming the reality that the source of truth and knowledge lies within each person's own mind. And genuine learning is to embrace the process of drawing this inner source out into the student's physical conscious mind.